It might not be all birthdays and sunshine, but Nona is going to make the most of it in this spooky new installment of the Locked Tomb series. In this episode, we discuss Jod, Paul, and the wacky Tridentarius family. I prove to everyone that I am always right, while Chloe and our very good friend Sarah betray me and have their own versions of how they interpreted the book. Now, before we get into the necromantic meat of the episode, I should mention that we do have a new Tumblr page, thepodinmedialess.tumblr.com, as well as all of our usual socials like Instagram and Twitter at @inmedialess. We want our listeners to get a little bit more involved, so shoot us some asks or DMs about suggestions on what we should cover, or any burning questions you might have for us. Also, a very quick shout out to the Catalepsis Discord. Y'all are cool. Thank you for listening to the podcast and discussing it. It was great. Other than that, enough chatting and let's get to the chatting.
Welcome to In Media Les, a podcast about queer relationships in media. I'm Chloe.
And I'm Val.
And today we have a very special guest, our friend Sarah.
Hello. That's me.
That's Sarah.
Yeah. Sarah's a theatrical stage manager on Broadway. And she's also the foremost expert, I think, about the Locked Tomb series. Definitely of the three of us, I feel like she's the one who has like the most knowledge of it. She's like a super expert. She's constantly rereading the books and just seems to know everything there is to know about the books. And she's the one who got me into them in the first place. So we could think of no one better to have on the show.
Yeah, and that's all recorded and on record.
I think that like by foremost expert, you mean I send you screen grabs all the time?
That's got to count for something. Like you constantly are reading the books and sending me different things that you discover in them. So for instance, the thing about the eyes, you've sent me that just today.
I was pretty pleased with myself because I called that on my most recent reread, so.
What thing about the eyes, excuse me?
We're operating under the assumption that everyone listening has already read the Locked Tomb series, including Nona? Like, what's happening?
Yes, because we've done episodes on the first two.
Okay, great.
And it'll be wild for someone to read the third one and not the other two.
And we give Val gives a spoiler warning. She records a spoiler warning at the beginning. So, spoil away.
Okay, great. I didn't want to like enter into a spoiler zone without appropriate warning. Oh, no. So, the story is that I finished Nona. And do y'all ever go into like a book morning where you finish a book and you're so sad it's over that you then can't figure out what else to read because you just want to read the book that you just read again?
Yes. I cried over that before.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Like, all over again in a way where it's still new.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, so I went into, like, deep book mourning when I finished Nona, so then the only thing to do was to just go back around and start back over with Gideon and then Harrow, which actually, right now, I'm in the last 50 pages of Harrow, so I think it's actually kind of funny I'm here to talk about Nona because I'm like, ooh, I think I've forgotten Nona.
I started listening to Gideon. And yeah, I like can't remember what happened in Nona, even though I read it like 2 weeks ago. It is wild.
I thought it was really interesting going from, you know, finishing Nona, going back around. I definitely think it's very illuminating to reread the books with the perspective of the third one. Mm-hmm. But I caught on my reread in Gideon that, oh boy, I'm going to butcher her name because I recently saw that her name is not pronounced the way I expected.
It's okay, it's just going to be on record forever.
The lictor who briefly was known as Dulcinea?
I think it's Kytheria or something
Kytheria,
like that.
Kytheria, something like that, yeah.
That's what we went with last time, also, like, who cares?
I still like Cytheria, personally.
In my head, I thought it was Cytheria. It
that
turns
could
out
be
it's
it too.
A no, I saw on like the Locked Tomb Wiki or something that it's pronounced with the hard K sound, but
okay. Suck it.
Then spell it with a K.
Cowards.
What's with people with names that start with C that pronounce it as K? I don't get it.
Hysterical. I see what you did there. Chloe.
Val did not get it.
I did not.
Val did not did get not. It. Say my name. Chloe. Say my
Chloe.
Name.
Chloe, when did we finish yesterday's game? What time?
Like 2 in the morning.
And when did my work start?
At like 6 in the morning?
At 7 a.m. So okay. You cannot bully me currently bully at 10 p.m. the next day.
I stayed up until 4 a.m. talking to, you had the tea talking off. To Sarah and Amanda.
Regardless. Okay, true.
And I did sleep in.
Sarah's anyway. Telling us an interesting thing about eyes.
Yes. Right, an interesting thing about eyes. So, are we saying Kytheria? Is that what we're doing? We're committing.
Yes.
We can say we're it committing. Differently every time, too.
Fine. When she sees Gideon's eyes for the first time, she immediately comments on it being, is it lipochrome? Probably lipo, because I think it refers to fat.
It's liposuction.
Now we're once more mired in how to pronounce.
We're all readers. No. We're not talkers.
Yeah, isn't this the problem always when you read something so many times and then you have no idea how to pronounce it?
Yeah, Hermione.
Yeah, 100%.
Hermione was how I yeah. pronounced it before I saw 100%. The movies.
But anyway, so she says something like, oh, lipochrome, recessive, how singular. And it became clear that she immediately put together
yeah.
who Gideon was, what her relationship was, that she was the daughter of Jod. And then I just hit the point in Harrow where Mercy Morn sees Gideon in Harrow and sees Gideon's eyes in Harrow's face. And Mercy Morn is very deeply confused for a minute, and then she finally clicks and she says, ah, lipochrome, recessive. And she said like something like, God, Kytheria must have realized immediately. And it was just very neat to see the parallel there. Mm-hmm. To see like, indeed, yeah, Kytheria did realize instantaneously. And then Augustine also does right away. It does, but he doesn't take nearly as much time. But we're going back and talking about Harrow, so I've done this wrong already. Thanks for having me on the show. Good night.
No, it's actually, did you notice while rereading Gideon just how like, with the knowledge that Kytheria knows about Gideon now, and knowing her affiliations and her plans-ish,
mm-hmm.
like, just how she behaves.
Yeah, it's...
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I love when that happens. When she's around Pal, and he's always confused.
I know, it's so right? heartbreaking.
It broke my heart. And I'm listening to it, so I hear their voices. And that's worse.
I have to say, I really appreciate that I've just hit the point in Harrow where Matthias has been summoned back and is fighting the sleeper. And right before that, like, there's a conversation with the real Septimus, the real Dulcinea, who I think, by the way, it's so
bleep
cool that Abigail manages to... No, it wasn't even Abigail. It was Harrow. That Harrow managed to pull in the actual spirits of the real Pro and the real Dulcinea, so we get to meet them, because we never meet their real mm-hmm. version in Gideon.
Yeah.
Right.
And they're very different and great.
And they're so bleep cool. You wish that you'd had the opportunity to have them as allies at the Kanan house.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so the real Dulcinea is incredible. And mm-hmm. I love that... Wait, but they swear... In the book. I was
they
about to
do.
Quote her swearing.
Yes.
You can quote it. Yeah.
I'm going to paraphrase instead. She basically says that when Kytheria had her, she fed her a bunch of lies. Like Kytheria was it basically trying to force her to tell her all about her life so that she could better fake being Dulcinea. And Dulcinea realized what was up and that she was going to take her place and just fed her a whole bunch of lies. Which is then why... Kytheria doesn't know a thing about Pal,
uh-huh.
about sex Pal, because Dulcinea was like, oh yeah, I'm giving you only misinformation.
She girl bossed.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Well, here's the thing that I really, really enjoy about the book. Even though every single one so far had a narrator that didn't know anything for very, very good reasons, but like, they are the character that has no idea what's happening at all, and everyone else around them knows more, right? And every single time, everyone around them is just the most competent person. And I think that's one of my favorite things about this, like, series altogether, because, like, everyone is legitimately trying their best and making very few mistakes. And it's just the circumstances and the way that things are that are the obstacles that mess things up for them. And I don't know, there's just something really cool about that. There's always like a fun thing when you're reading something and someone fails a lot, or like they don't know how to do a thing and they have to deal with that. But also there is something special about just having such a really, really competent team and then them having to deal with something that is very much beyond them, that is even more satisfying to me personally.
Yeah, I thought it was really neat in Harrow how Abigail and everyone else around Harrow had figured out that they were in a bubble reality in the river and that it was of Harrow's creation long before Harrow did. And they were all just like letting her go along with her delusions and just letting her come to the conclusion on her own time. Anyway, I guess we should like actually talk about Nona. Wow. Nona, wow.
Okay. Usually I start with like a quick summary. So I'm going
to
try to do my best.
These are always the hardest books to summarize.
This is the hardest part. So please add on as I go. So Nona is in the body of Harrow, and they are on a planet that is run... Is it run by Blood of Eden or Blood of Eden just present on it?
I think they're just present on it. It sounded like there were a bunch of different type of like rebels on there, and all the refugees are going
there.
It
is a rebel. Because the Empire does not, like, the Empire comes and like threatens them at the end. So it's definitely not under Imperial control.
But the Empire tries to assert control.
Yes.
I kind of got the impression that at one point it was.
Yes.
I also get the impression that maybe everything is empires to the Empire, and even if this planet never was, they're just like, well, it's in our territory, so of course you're ours. If we wanted to, we'll come in here and do whatever we want, but we don't want to.
Although we later learn that that's not true, that like that one ship escaped, right? So there are humans out there who are not part of the Empire's.
Was it just the one ship? I feel like it was a bunch.
Or multiple ships.
Because John sucks. Continue with your summary.
Anyway, okay, so Nona is very childlike. She is living with Pyrrha, who is in the Lictor, Gideon's body. And Camilla and Palamedes are sharing a body. Mm-hmm. And at the start, they're kind of trying to figure out who Nona is. I think their theory at the beginning is that she's Gideon with memory loss, I think is what, or that's like the misdirection at least that people.
Well, I thought they said there were two options, either Harrow or Gideon, and they're just not sure.
I also think there was some indication that they thought perhaps she could be like a perfect merge of the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Nona's also working as a teacher's assistant at a school where she befriends a lot of the kids.
Most importantly, one of them is named Hot Sauce.
Yes.
Yeah.
And why is she named Hot Sauce?
Because Hot Sauce is great.
For the best reason.
That was the best reveal.
No, there was one reveal that was better, I would argue.
Okay, now tell us what that is.
The friendship bracelets and the little like friendship handshake that they had, which was amazing.
Okay,
fair enough. I won.
I'll give you that one. Okay, so, you know, as part of being near Camilla and Palamedes and Pyrrha, as well as working as the teacher's assistant, Nona's witness to a lot of the things that are going on. So Blood of Eden is currently having, like, a struggle between two factions within it. So there's one faction that seems to be more of a moderate, like, let's work with necromancers, we can oppose the Empire, but still have like necromancers on our side, which I think that's We Suffer's faction. Mm-hmm. Whereas there's another faction, the Merv Wing, I think it's called, that just wants to kill all the necromancers. And this is playing out while above them in the sky, one of the resurrection beasts, undead planet soul, basically, is beginning to materialize. It's number 7, which is Uranus, right?
I wasn't really sure if it was that or if it was Neptune.
Well, it's called Varun.
One of those is funnier than the other, and I feel like that's usually indicative of that being the right answer.
Yeah. I feel like, I don't know, it being a like a Uranus joke would be very on
brand. Yeah, right.
Yeah, but I guess we don't know for sure. But anyways, regardless, so the basically the presence of that resurrection beast has driven like all the necromancers insane, including, you know, they find Judith. Oh, God, now I have Deuterus? To say her last name. Deuterus, mm-hmm. Who's from the second house and was in the first book. And we start learning some things that Nona can do. She's really good at healing. She can understand.
Body language.
Body language. She can hear what the resurrection beast is saying through Judith's screams. Mm-hmm. And she can talk to the resurrection beast. And we learn that also working with the Blood of Eden is Corona Beth.
Love her.
Known as Crown, who is, okay, is it Iante? Is mm-hmm. that what we decided?
Oh, really?
That's how they say it. Or is it Iante? That's how they say it in the Iante. Audiobook.
Is how?
Iante.
Iante?
Iante. Yeah. Iante. Iante?
Okay.
Tridentarius. That, I'm fairly confident about that part, at least. And I know, I'm skipping over a lot, I know, but...
why don't Iante, we just read the book?
Yeah, well, this is just an audiobook now. Arrives. They do this weird broadcast to the planet below, which is, I want to talk about that broadcast at some point because it's so weird. It's such a weird scene, and I feel like there's something in there. It's like one of those things where I like read it. I'm like, there's some more to this that I'm not getting. I'm sure, but it's revealed that Iante and Gideon, aka Crown Prince something or
Tower,
other.
Kiriana. They're both Tower Princes. Kiriana.
Tower yeah. Prince. Yes.
They're both Tower Princes. And it's...
yes.
Kiriana.
Iante, Niberius, and Kiriana something. Yeah.
And also they're like best friends now.
Yeah, they're best friends now.
They've traded friendship bracelets and have a special
Which
handshake.
Is so funny because in Harrow they can't stand each other. So... mm-hmm.
Well, because they're fighting over Harrow. And now they're kind of just, like, without her. And they have the space to bond. And now Iante knows that Gideon is the boss's daughter.
Oh, you think she's maybe sucking up?
I think she's bored.
That would be very Iante to suck up.
I think so. But also, like, I just like that they bonded. I like it so much.
I just feel like Iante always has, like, another ulterior motive or agenda. I don't think she's sincerely friends with Gideon, but also, like, wow, this is going to spin off into another thought. I also don't think Gideon is sincerely herself. So even if she has befriended Iante, it's not, like, she's not her whole and complete self. So I don't know how much merit there is to that friendship.
Okay, I think that's, like, the fundamental question about this book is about how much of Gideon is Gideon right now. You know, one theory is that some of Gideon is still in Harrow, some piece of her empathy, mm-hmm. and that's why she's kind of
That's
cruel.
What I think, too.
But the other thing, you know, the other theory that I've read, because I've been on the subreddit and whatnot, is that, like, the first book is told from Gideon's perspective, and so maybe Gideon really is just a jerk.
Like, she did behave
maybe from her perspective
in... like, person to other characters than what she's like on the inside. Like, everyone was very scared of her in the first book because she was just, like, the creepy, weird, silent, broody...
at the beginning, emo, but that was because she didn't speak at the beginning because Harrow told her she couldn't.
Yeah.
By the end of the book, everybody loved her.
Yeah.
She's portrayed as, and I think her actions... and her words in Gideon are always, she's kind, she's caring, she's got a big heart, even if she's been abused by the world, she's still fundamentally a compassionate, caring person whose empathy, I think at times, like, she doesn't even want to be as empathetic as she is, but she can't help herself. She's driven by it. And that seems to be, at least from the exterior, like, lacking in Nona.
In this one, definitely, because in Harrow, at the end of it, she was not like how she is now.
Yeah.
I think it has a lot to do with the missing... because she has a cut on her throat now, too. Like, what is that all about? Because she got pierced through the chest, that I understand. But now, remember she has like a slice around her throat.
Oh, yeah.
So like,
yeah,
we don't know what that's about either.
Yeah, and Gideon, I don't remember. She got her kneecap was screwed up at the end of Gideon. And then, of course, she got, you know, run through the heart with that railing. But I don't remember her sustaining a neck injury. I was puzzled about that, too.
No, it definitely has something to do with John and what happened after the river or whatever. Maybe even when Blood of Eden had Gideon's body. Or I guess they never did. Because in Harrow, Deuteris, Camilla, and Coronabeth have her body. And all of a sudden, they didn't have her body afterwards. So we don't know a lot of stuff.
I mean, I'm personally of the opinion, or I mean, opinion is a strong word. I am inclined to believe that there is something of Gideon that is absent or missing. Like some of her got lost in translation.
Yeah. Well, I feel like maybe her empathy is what makes Nona so, like, loving.
But I think also, like, Harrow is completely absent from Nona, though.
She's not, though. She's not completely absent. Because Nona has some of Harrow's memories.
Yes.
And has the dreams where Harrow, because this was something that happened in the second book, where you kind of, like, take the other person's place in the dreams. And Harrow is experiencing Electo's dreams.
Or in the dreams or whatever.
Yes. And that's why John, God, whatever, is talking and says Harrow's name, but he's clearly talking to Electo, who's in Nona.
Yeah, and there are memories that surface of, like Chloe said, like of specifically, adorably, there's memories that Nona has of the pool, right?
Yeah.
And that seems to be told from Harrow's perspective about Gideon.
Yes.
Yep.
There was something to me personally, like when reading those, that was a little off. And I wasn't sure if it was a dream or if maybe there's something parallel between that and what Electo actually experienced at some point.
What do you mean?
I don't know. There was like a weird thing where it didn't feel entirely like the pool scene. And it could have just been the fact that it's a fuzzy memory in the dream, but just something was a little off there.
Could you say more about what you mean?
I don't know,
that?
Chloe. The vibes is the vibes.
Does anybody else find it very, like, I think this is something that I'm also with the reread of the two books. It is referenced so many times. Like Mercy Morn was just bringing it up at the part I was in at in Harrow, that Electo is a monster, that Electo is murderous, monstrous. There's something not human. There's something horrifying or scary about Electo. And like Mercy Morn even just said something about like, if it had been her, I'd be dead already. Or she would have attacked me immediately or something along those lines. It's so funny that Electo is referenced as being monstrous and uncontrollable and monstrous and da-da-da. And then we see Nona, who we perceive as largely Electo inside Harrow, and she's so sweet, and she's so innocent, and she's so endearing and childlike and pure. It just seems incongruent with all the descriptors of Electo as being this monster.
And we know, at least early on, Jod was able to like have conversations with Electo and talk to her about what he did and why, and that didn't cause Electo to fly into a rage and try and kill him, even though he was telling her, like, yeah, I ate part of your soul to become God and then put what was left into this Barbie body, which the Electo of at least the present, and from what we know, would be probably pretty upset about that. So it's like, what happened that made Electo so angry?
Just like thinking about it, right? Electo is Earth.
Yes.
And the resurrection beasts are these corrupted souls of the planet.
Like her siblings.
Yeah. So there's that aspect. But also, she might be a hybrid. She might be a resurrected one as well.
Or, well,
I don't think she is in the same way that the other.
Oh, yeah. She's 100% a resurrection beast.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Absolutely.
But, like, she is a very different type of it, I think. Because it seems like John did resurrect Earth in his own way, right? Because it was dying from us humans. But also, like, maybe that's why Lictors don't like her and think that she's like the most dangerous thing in the world, is because they cannot be around resurrection beasts.
Oh, actually, I mean, because the folks that talk about her being monstrous are lictors, and resurrection beasts have it out for lictors specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's some of the why she would have tried to kill them. Every resurrection beast is pointed towards and trying to kill lictors because they committed that, the sin that makes them a lictor. Whereas, like, John didn't really? So maybe John didn't, like, complete the process the way that they did. Obviously, that's the bone of contention, right, between him and his lictors who realize what he's done. So,
but also, another thing, though, sorry to interrupt, but, like, John seems to have rewritten their memories.
Yes, he did.
Yes, that threw me for a loop. I only just kind of pieced that together, which is why they didn't realize about the eye color, is because when he killed them all, because he killed everybody, right? And then brought them back, he brought them back, it seems like, without a memory of who Alecto was or what he had done or that he had ever had golden
eyes.
Or that
they, like, how they even died and what happened. John could have just told him, like, she's the worst, and here are these memories you have of her being the worst. And use that to maybe... I think he did that on purpose to deter them from going to unlock her.
Ooh, I don't know if that's true, though, because it's specifically stated that, like, they all knew Alecto, and they were the ones who said she's too dangerous and needs to be locked away, needs to be killed, needs to
but
be handled.
But we don't know if they actually knew her. That's what I'm saying, because John is able to put memories into people. I'm saying maybe he used that as a weapon to get them to not unlock the tomb. And maybe, I don't know, okay. We're all guessing.
I guess I see your point here, which is that when you have a character who is capable of stuffing whatever he wants into someone's head, it's impossible to say, you know, whether anything actually happened to them or whether it was something that was just placed there, which is interesting.
Because it seems like he did that with Alecto as well. He told her his side of the story, and that's all she knows.
And can we talk about how messed up that story was, the whole
process?
Like, as someone, like, okay, so he follows, like, a very traditional scientific trajectory, right? He gets his doctorate, he does a postdoc, and then he sells out to industry, and then he's, you know, has his startup, and he is apparently working on cryogenic freezing mostly.
Yes. It sounds with the intention to then utilize it to evacuate the planet, right?
Yes, because I think the implication is because of, like, global warming.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, like, the world is dying and they need a way to evacuate everyone to another planet. So they need a way to, like, freeze everyone. But then there's a lot of concerns because it's not a perfect process. And also, like, you know, they mentioned that, yeah, like, it doesn't work for everyone. It only has a certain percentage success rate, and it doesn't work well for, like, pregnant women. And, like, there's all these concerns about it. He's very upset about that. And how to, like, it turns into a cult so quickly. Like, it's just so weird how quickly it goes from, like, we were scientists to, like, oh, actually, we were a cult. Like, what? No, that doesn't make sense. And, like, it's so clear that, like, he is, he's a narcissist. Like, at no point does he think about how he can help people selflessly. It's all about how he can be the one who is credited with saving humanity.
He's even edited the narrative afterwards to be like, oh, yeah, he resurrected all the planets. He conveniently leaves out that he resurrected them after he killed all of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
He resurrected, like, Earth and all of its denizens, but only after he killed all of them.
Yes. He's the one who triggered the nuclear war.
Yes. Yeah, he makes it sound as though, oh, yeah, a nuclear bomb was what did it. It's like, but, dude, you set that off.
Yeah. So to continue, because... summary, but, like, yeah, basically what we find out is that he had been puppeting the president of the United States. I mean, it's the country is never named, but it's totally the United States, let's be real.
What?
The president had died, and then the Secret Service came to him and said, like, can you puppet the president? We know you've got these powers. Can you puppet the president just until, I don't know, the midterms, something, who knows? And he uses that to start a nuclear war, and... part of the reason he does that, I guess, is because all the rich people are going to flee on spaceships. And mm-hmm. he's mad about that, which it's really funny. Okay. Very mild Horizon Zero Dawn spoiler here is that that same thing happens in Horizon Zero Dawn. All the rich people try and leave on spaceships and it because of the world ending. And it's just like...
Yeah, there's also a book that I want you to read eventually okay. that I will not say the name of, but exactly so, the same thing.
It's always the rich people piecing out on ships. And yeah, he started the nuclear war and then... We learned that all the lictors were just people who were around him, like...
Disciples, basically.
Lictor Gideon was a cop, I think, and you can kind of figure... No, who was the cop?
Pyrrha was the cop.
Mm-hmm. You find it, but, like, you can map them all. It's like a little puzzle of mapping them all to each other. Mercy Morn was a nun, I think?
Anyway. It's, fascinating because you get the idea, right, that like his lictors were his disciples, were around at the beginning, but the fact that a couple of them were corpses that he never knew, Cassiopeia and
Ulysses
were just...
I don't think it was Cassiopeia, was it?
Oh, I thought it was Ulysses and Cassiopeia, maybe not.
Regardless, those two that we don't know anything about at all.
Yeah, that were just like straight up dead bodies that he grew attached to and then resurrected them.
Yeah, yikes.
It's,
He's a real piece of work.
Yeah.
And like, at the end, when he made Gideon the switch for the bomb and had his arm at home, like, just weird. And Anastasia just like... killing herself so that he could practice with the soul. There's a lot of messed up stuff. Mm-hmm.
Oh my god.
I also...
Oh my god.
it's just like, it's so interesting because on one hand, while you're reading, you're so into this narrative and you're like, yeah, that's exactly what happened. And then afterwards, you start to process it and you can see all the places where he like, very obviously self-edited. And I really like that process, too, because, you know, I'm a slow reader. So I had moments after each of those, like, little interlude chapters to think about it after the initial reaction of, like, yeah, that's exactly what's happening. That's how it did. That's perfectly the explanation for what he was doing. Yeah, nothing is wrong with it. And then afterwards, you're like, oh, wait a second. He's in a cult, and he is, having dead kids walk around, and he really loves them, and that's weird.
We just have like the final act, I feel like. So eventually they come up with a plan. Nona is going to pretend to be Hera. They're going to hand Nona over to Ionte and then use that as a way to make their way into the Imperial compound. Along the way, the resurrection beast begins to spawn, like, are they described as, like, insect things?
Heralds?
Yeah, heralds.
I just picture the flying monkeys from Wizard of Oz, honestly.
I always think of the Pokemon Scyther whenever I think of large insects, but maybe that's just me. So, basically, everyone ends up together. There's some stuff about Nona starting to kind of piece together who she is. She starts to show that she has some like powers over the other resurrection beast, and
she reveals that she's known that she's dying ever since she woke up, which is so messed up and sad.
Yes, because she says her soul isn't in the right body and that Hera's body isn't able to like contain her soul. This is when we start feeling like there's parts of Hera and Gideon in her. Like, there's the part where she has that irresistible urge to kiss Gideon, and she doesn't know where it came from.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, a lot of women are into Gideon. So can we really use that as evidence?
Well, Gideon's currently a corpse, so I don't know how many people are into necrophilia, though. More than you would think.
In this book, I think all of them.
Oh, God.
And I'm still firmly in the camp that Ionte is actually fully invested in this friendship, and then Gideon is really not.
I mean, we can talk about that, but anyways, they all travel to the ninth house because they want to get into the Locked Tomb.
In a truck, which was cool.
the ninth house is being attacked by something else, devils. I want to talk about, I don't understand what those are or why they're there, but that's something else to talk about. Nona enters the tomb, goes to her body, and re-enters it, awakening as Electo. Electo is pissed. And, Harrow...
wakes back up, it seems like.
Harrow wakes up, and Electo... I'm trying to... Harrow tries to pledge service to Electo, and Harrow...
Nope, I think it's the other way around.
Electo pledges service to Harrow.
Yes, because she realizes it's a direct descendant of... is it Anastasia?
Anastasia.
Yeah.
I forget what happens from there exactly.
Gideon gets angry and is like, yes. Get jealous. In line.
Yeah.
And they go stab God.
Right. Yeah.
While he's napping. Was napping, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is the thing that's like, how did Gideon get back into Gideon? Like, how did the part of Gideon that was sequestered away in the back of Harrow's mind, last we checked, how did that get into Gideon's body?
We don't know if it did, though.
Yeah, it is definitely a puzzle. I mean, there's enough of Gideon in there that, like, she clearly has the memories of everything mm-hmm. that's transpired to her.
And she's very sassy.
She is,
and that was a very sassy thing to say.
Obviously still wildly protective of and possessive of, possessive may is not the right word, but like she gets really angry that Electo is pledging service to Harrow.
It's less possessive and more like she's Harrow's.
Yeah, like I am her cavalier. We have a thing here. but it really makes me wonder, like, how did that Gideon get transferred? Or maybe she just really didn't. Maybe it's just like partial. Maybe there's a piece of Gideon still in Harrow that needs to be relinquished. I don't know. Questions for the next book.
Here's the thing though, right? She saw that that's exactly what, like, that Nona was in Harrow's body, but she immediately knew that wasn't Harrow. And she was pretty, like, maybe not necessarily mad at her, but like...
Yeah, less than thrilled.
She was not excited to know that Harrow was not in Harrow. So that could also have been why she behaved very cold. I mean, there's definitely coldness in her that is very un-Gideon-like, but also, like, the way that she reacted after she realized it was Harrow was more like Gideon than she was around Nona, which makes sense, because, like, even in death, this girl's like, my girlfriend is back.
So that's basically the summary. I wrote out also some very mean questions to ask you both, so let me know when you're ready for the first question.
Oh, I'm so intrigued. I want a mean question.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about this. The Gideon, to me, is like a murder mystery party, right? They're locked in this house, and people are dying, and you have to figure out who the murderer is. It's a murder mystery.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Harrow is a few different things, but... in my mind, it is primarily a book about training or growing past trauma. It's very much about Harrow reconciling the events of the first book. So it's about trauma and her growing past that. So it's a book about recovery and growth. What is the theme or the genre of Nona?
The theme or genre of Nona?
Yeah.
Like that is a very mean question.
If the first one is a murder mystery and the second one's about you like recovering from trauma, what is the third one? I struggle
with
this.
It's a coming of age story.
Coming of age story. Okay.
it's a girl dealing with an eating disorder and coming to terms that she is dying.
Rebirth?
Fault in our stars.
It's the fault in our stars.
There's a rebirth or, I mean, at some point in the book that they, right, there's a mention of the distinction between rebirth and resurrection.
I don't remember that.
Oh, really? Maybe it was me just pondering over it. But
well, that is the question with Electo. Is she a resurrection beast or was she for real reborn?
Yeah, I do feel like it's sort of, it plays with themes of what it is to be reborn or resurrected because we see it happen so many times. Like, even looking at what happens with Palamedes and Camilla. Like, what was that? Was that?
That was cool. I love Paul.
It's a rebirth, right? It's as a new being. So I feel like we just keep confronting that theme. I think that's why we're so puzzled of Gideon too. Is like, okay, who is she now? Like, how are we transformed? How are we reborn? How are we resurrected? How are we revived? Who are we? And once we are, there's so many different like awakenings to new selves.
This book is wild. How can there be three books when we have no idea what's happening at any time, and it's so entertaining and good? How?
That's why I like immediately turned back around, did my Gideon and Harrow reread, and then I'm hoping that when I go back through Nona, I do think sometimes it's helpful to read these books knowing where they end so that you can go back and sort of have that additional education.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
What is your second question, you bully?
Well, as I go down the list, who was your favorite character in Nona?
That is even meaner. You go first, Sarah.
Favorite character in Nona? Oh, boy. That is a tough one. Can I just say Paul?
Okay.
Everything to do with, like, the combination. The relationship between Camilla and Palamedes is so heartwarming and brilliant, and the fact that they spend the whole book recording messages to each other, the fact that they inhabit the same body but never get to interact, like, the whole relationship trajectory is so pure, and it made me cry repeatedly. So I'm just gonna say Camilla and Palamedes and the combination of Paul.
So three characters.
No, they're one. They're only in that one body for most of the
book. It's a holy trinity. They're three separate characters, but they're all the same person.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually, getting back to the previous question, I think Nona is a religious novel.
It makes controversial sense. There's a lot of it's Bible a,
yeah, I mean, even the conversation about, like, what's the difference between rebirth and resurrection, I'm sure there's some Christian scholars who've debated that at length, like, in terms of Jesus Christ.
Are you sure?
I don't know. They've debated everything about Jesus at length, so I assume someone's debated that at some point. Like, is there a difference between Jesus being resurrected versus the idea of rebirth? But yes, to me, okay, there's a lot of religious teams. You've got Camilla, Palamedes, and Paul, who are all the same person but three different people, which is like very much like the Holy Trinity, the Father, Son, the Holy Ghost, which are three separate entities but also all part of God. You've got, you know, this idea of the world as something that is this...
John is the, like, Messiah and also... You know.
But also, like, in some ways, like, a false prophet. Like, there's a lot of different religious elements to this. There's Judith, who's, like, got real vibes of, like, a prophet that has, you know, like, is communicating something, but it's impossible for us to understand, and she's blind.
Electo's made out of a rib.
Yeah. There's so many different little religious pieces to this.
There's a sacrifice of animals.
Yep. And the Blood of Eden all has a very, like, religious
their name
flavor
is
to
Blood
it.
Blood of Eden.
All of their names also are... Aren't all of their names taken from, like, some of them are taken from Shakespeare? I have to look this up. But, like, all of their names also sound like full-blown religious cult members.
Snap back to reality.
Yes.
That's from the Bible.
That is from Eminem 1, Book 5. No, I don't know.
I forgot about the full name of...
yes.
Who was that the full name of? Wake?
Wake. Who I will never forget, because her name's Commander Wake, and I had a D&D character named
Commander,
Commander Wake.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of religion in here.
Yes. So, anyways, to answer my own question. My favorite character...
Who's your favorite?
Iante. I love her to death.
She is such a peak Chloe character. It was very satisfying. Chloe and I took the lock tomb, like, which house are you?
Yeah.
We both got the same house, and I was like, okay, I know this instantaneously that I am the Corona Beth to your Iante.
Yep.
I mean, my middle name's even Beth. It's appropriate.
Yeah, it works out well. What about you, Val?
So, overall, Iante forever. Bleep. Okay. Love her. This book specifically, Camilla. Just because we don't have a lot of Iante, and she's very depressed in this one. And it's like, no, you got a girl boss. You gotta get back on that horse. Yeah.
And also, okay, what's going on with Iante and Corona Beth, like, wanting to be the same person? They're, like, jealous of Paul, but it's, like, sexual also.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
It's really cool.
Oops, sorry. Bleep that out. I'm so sorry. Look, I'll put this post-it in the middle of my screen. Sarah, don't swear. I loved in Gideon, I just told this to Chloe the other day, but the fact that Corona Beth seems destroyed by the fact that Babs gets consumed in the lictorial process, and then you find out that she's devastated not because of Babs. She doesn't care. She like literally is like, "Cat, Babs, I don't care about Babs. Why didn't she pick me?"
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, she's destroyed.
Corona Beth wants Iante to eat her.
Yep.
But I think Iante didn't do it because she knew she'd never be able to be like with her. Like their goal is something. They want to be something like Paul. They don't want to be something like a lictor.
Yeah.
Right.
Iante is fully aware of it. I think she like. I honestly believe that Iante loves Corona Beth more than Corona Beth loves Iante. Even though on the page, Corona Beth is like her heel.
Yes.
Because think about it, literally spent the entire life making it seem like her twin sister is also a necromancer.
Yeah.
That is far more effort than Corona Beth probably ever put into their relationship ever.
That's a good point. Okay.
All of the relationships in these books are like really, really interesting and complex, and I love them because they're all like really messed up and need to go to therapy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's one of those need to go to therapy where like the first 18 therapists are just not going to work. So it's going to take a lot of effort, and only if they want to fix themselves, which none of them do, which is perfect.
Speaking of messed up relationships, okay, but in the best way. So Camilla and Palamedes, we know that Pal wanted very much to marry Dulcinea.
Yeah.
Camilla seems to be in love with Pal, right?
Yep.
Is she?
I'm pretty sure she's in love with him.
I get a very, like, the most purest of love truly do love each other completely, but I don't see it, like, I didn't get romantic vibes.
Okay, remember that time that Pal kissed Nona's hand and said, pass that on to Camilla, and Nona did so, and Camilla blushed and had to disappear for, like, an hour and go lay down or something?
I read that more as, like, because Nona imitates body language so well. This is one of the first times that she was able to feel Palamedes instead of recording messages to each other. You know, like, this was one of the first times where... Well, not the first time, because we know she reacted poorly to it before. But I think this is, like, just a moment where she's able to touch him in real life, physically, in reality. And it feels just like him.
Yeah, and then she has a very, like, seeming, like... blushed, flushed reaction to it.
I thought she went to the bathroom to cry. Is that not what happened? I thought she like hid away in the bath and just like stayed there for a long time. I read that as she was crying in there. I think that means we have to reread the book again.
Great.
I read it as she was like so flustered that she had to go and have like a cold bath kind of situation.
You know what? That's valid.
I don't know that Pal feels the same way back. I kind of, yeah, I wasn't sure if on his end it was the same sort of romantic love, since he seemed to have had that, at least conceptually, for Dulcinea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to me very much is like a very platonic, deep, deep, deep relationship. It's like an aromantic relationship, but just as equally strong as anything romantic could be. But also, like, I don't know, whatever, you know. It could be romantic.
Did you have a feeling about it, Chloe?
Sorry, I was just reading a fan theory. I just totally...
she was reading fan fiction.
I'm on the subreddit right now, and I just saw something interesting. Sorry, what was the question?
Oh, about the nature of Camilla and Palamedes' relationship, if you think it's romantic or not.
This is one of those things where it's like, it's so far from the typical human experience that is romance a word that can even apply at that point? When you're sharing about... like. Can you have a romance with your arm? Like, if you're you're sharing... Okay, that was bad. Oh, God.
John has a relationship with an arm.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, that was the wrong thing to say. But it's just like, it's just so far out from the human experience of what romance is that it's impossible, I think, to say on some level, even though they are two separate entities. Is it romantic on some level? Yes. Is it something else entirely that we don't have a word for? I think so, that too. I don't know. That's a weasel answer, but I'm going to say there is some romance to it. I'm going to put my foot down.
Yeah. I feel like Camilla is very much in love with Palamedes. I just don't know that he loves her. I don't know that he's in love with her.
Yeah.
But like the love also goes beyond the bounds of, like you were saying, of what a normal romance would be anyway. So it's almost a moot point.
I wonder if the short story of them can shed some light on that.
I need to also read the whole thing that's told from Judith's perspective.
I didn't know about that. I just found out about it like a few days ago. There's two short stories now. It's great.
Oh, wait, there was another one too?
There's the Sex Pal one.
Mm-hmm.
And Judith.
Okay.
Yeah.
As yet unsent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
See, I'm not the total expert. Yeah. I still haven't read those.
Okay.
Well, why did we even have you on this podcast?
She's been super insightful the whole time in a way that we were both unable to be. Maybe that.
So that I could slip up periodically and swear. Also, circling back to an earlier thing, Varun means Neptune in Hindi.
Oh, there we go.
Okay. Could have been Uranus.
Could have been Uranus, alas.
Do you have to bleep that?
No.
It's the name of a planet.
There it is.
And a body part.
Yeah. I think
scientific anatomical body part.
Also, what gets flagged as explicit in a podcast is kind of not, it's not like...
It's vibes.
We're not going to get a fine from the, whatever it's called, FTC, FCC or something.
The podcast police.
Yeah, the podcast police.
The PPs.
It's going to be...
I'm tired.
I don't know who would be the podcast police. I don't even know. Anyway, so, okay, we've got a couple minutes left. So one last question for you, which is what mysteries are outstanding? Which ones are you like most interested in? Like, I was thinking about them. There's a few. Like, what are the devils? What the heck are the devils? Where do they come from? What are they? Why are they, like, because it's such a, like, random... Okay, Benny, could you please not be on the keyboard? Thank you. it's so random that they appear when they do. It just feels like, I don't know, like, what's their purpose in even being there?
It feels to me like John is slipping because he's depressed and is, like, very sad and not being the emperor. And it seems like everything is falling apart within their empire because he's sad. That's how I read it.
So you think the devils are some kind of symptom of some kind of
depression? Yeah, I think the river is spilling over.
Okay. And then, well, what? Go ahead.
I was going to say, well. That is an outstanding question that I am very intrigued by as of this Harrow reread, is Abigail Pent beseeches Harrow and says, something's very wrong with the river. I implore you, Harrow, to figure out what's going wrong with the river.
Yeah.
And that is something that we have not had answered yet, which, like, is a fair point, because every time the river is described, it's supposed to be this place that you go when you die, and it sounds horrific. It reeks, and it's bloody, and it's filled with body parts, and it sounds monstrously awful, like hell itself. So I just feel like there's this big... undercurrent is such a like way too on the nose thing.
Yeah.
But like the river is the thing that permeates the story, and there's something poisoned about it. And that is yet to be addressed, what the nature of that is. And you know, my suspicion is that it has something to do with John himself and what he's done. But
he messed something up in it a long time ago. Mm-hmm. It's just getting worse.
Yeah.
He's the pollution.
I mean, he does seem to be a garbage person, so.
Yeah.
Also, Crux is huge.
Crux.
Like, that was weird to see him described from a different perspective. I thought he was just, like, Filch from Harry Potter or something. But no, he's apparently a very big guy.
Did anybody else just feel very, like, I don't know. It was so upsetting that Gideon murdered him. I know he had it coming, but it was still, I don't know. It was this,
Did
like,
she?
Very...
Yeah.
Yes, she killed Crux. And it was
When? What?
When they went back to the ninth.
Yeah.
She killed Crux. And then she was like raging afterwards about how
she's the one who stabbed him.
How it didn't feel satisfying, how she thought it was gonna feel satisfying.
That's right.
It was so upsetting. It's like watching Gideon has always been pretty heroic and seems to have a pretty good moral core considering the awful circumstances she was raised under. So like watching her brutally murder Crux.
Did he not ask for her to do it though? I think he was saying, all of you are cowards, kill me, I am infected. And they just like all are trying to heal him and Gideon does kill him. Now that I'm faintly remembering that.
I'm pretty sure she did it like vindictively. I don't think it was a mercy killing.
I think
she did it because she thought it would feel good.
Yes, I also got the feeling that she was very angry that he asked her to do it. It didn't feel like it was genuine, like, I hate you, now it's time to kill you. I felt very sad for her when
Gideon
she did it.
Okay, Gideon apologist, jeez.
Did we read the same book? What am I talking about? Why is of my stuff so different from you guys?
I don't know.
Because I definitely felt like in that moment she was doing it, like, vindictively for all of the mistreatment that she endured from Crux.
It felt more, like, impulsive than, I finally get to kill you. It felt more like, I'm mad at you that you make sense that we have to kill you because you are infected with you're like a devil person waiting to come out.
Let me grab the book real quick.
Well, I guess this is another outstanding question we have then, is the nature of the murder of Crux.
I'm going to let Chloe find it.
Yes, we're going to find this. We're going to read the exact lines.
This is just a master debate now.
It's not, and also it's not like so much a question, but I think we're all sort of waiting for confirmation, right? That Hera did genuinely get into the tomb when she was a kid, and it is because she had Gideon's blood on her.
Yeah, yeah. That's 100%.
I just kind of want to like watch John have that moment of realization.
Didn't he in Hera?
No. In Hera, he doesn't believe her.
That's right. He doesn't know about the blood.
Unless it happens at the very end and I haven't gotten to the that part of the reread yet, but I don't think he winds up in Harrow believing that Harrow actually got into the locked tomb.
I just love the moment where Ianthe is very upset with Pyrrha because she's like, he cannot find out another one of his betrayed him. He cannot say the word, but It starts with an S, ends with a LUT.
I'm struggling here.
How dare you find a very specific scene in a book that's probably like a sentence?
I think also another outstanding question we have that I'm super interested to know the answer to is, what was the nature of Anastasia's attempt at Lictorhood that John had to kill her cavalier? Because I think all of us are suspicious of John, right? That maybe Anastasia and her cavalier had gotten too close to perfect Lictorhood and it would have threatened his, maybe it would have threatened his power. Maybe it would have threatened his being the sole god of this empire.
It's definitely that, but also I feel like it could have been as well, whatever he did to them, maybe they were starting to figure it out because they don't know that their cult killed the planet. I don't think they know. And also, how nerdy is it that they all chose their names? That is, like, the nerdiest thing. They had a meeting about it.
What, you mean, like...
Like, there's no way that they did not have, like, a little meeting with an agenda of them picking their names out. Like, the last names with the numbers and the houses. I think that's why we only get the first letter. Because it's probably... They probably had, like, regular names like Bob or whatever, or Gary. You know what I mean?
Oh, before they picked names like Anastasia and Mercy Mornin. Yeah. But yeah, I'm very intrigued to find out what it was about Anastasia's attempt at Lictorhood that required John putting down her cavalier. Another large outstanding question.
I think she just figured out that they didn't have to kill the cavalier.
Okay, I found it.
I found it too. Oh, okay. Read it.
I'm just going to read it. Just let him go, snarled Kiriona. He wants to die. I'll do it. I've wanted to do this for years. There's some other stuff. Then do it, coward, Crux said. Do it. The knife is before you. The work has been done. Gideon says some more stuff, and, you know, it's all about, like, I'm the emperor's daughter, and you remain what you are, said Crux, a worthless millstone hung around my daughter's neck. You were born to make her suffer. You died as you lived, Gideon Nav, a disappointment to me and to God. There was a wet, meaty sound. The old man exhaled. It was dark. There was light, bright, cold, electrifying, like death, and the noise of another rock slowly, agonizingly grinding away. And Kiryona kept saying, it didn't feel good. F-bomb, it didn't feel good. Why didn't it feel good? Why didn't it feel good? You effing old, you hideous, cruel, you bastard. Why can't I?
Yeah.
That does not sound like it was reluctant or something that she regretted doing.
She was trying to.
It sounded like.
That does not sound like she regretted it.
No.
Come on.
Nope, doesn't sound like she regretted it. It sounds like she just...
It sounds like a kid who wants their dad figure to apologize for all the abuse and making, like, this is what I made with my life, this is who I am, can you apologize to me? And he refused to do that. And, like, in a fit of anger, it feels very impulsive, like, she just went for it. It doesn't feel to me like she was like, haha, finally got him.
No, she's saying, like, I wish... So this is someone who's abused her, and she's getting revenge, and
feel like revenge at all.
Well, the point is that she's feeling like it wasn't enough. It wasn't satisfying enough. Not that she regretted doing it. There's no regret in what she did.
I don't agree with that.
Okay, well, you're outvoted 2-1.
It's definitely a gray area, but I'm strongly of the opinion that, like, there's a lot of regret there, and it's just, you know, like, she finally came home, right? And she did make something of herself, and he still refuses to acknowledge it. And it's very hypocritical of him, because he's all about being a servant to the house who serves God, and now she is God, and he refuses to change his point of view regarding her. And, like, okay. It did not feel to me like it's something that she actually has done on purpose and, like, expected it.
She drove a knife through him. What do you mean done on purpose?
It feels like a heat of a moment thing. It's not like she was waiting for it to happen, and when no one would do it, she was just like,
"I'll do it." She literally said, "It's not what I thought it would feel like." She had thought about it before.
Yeah, she thought about
killing him,
Hera with a pillow, all of her life too, and like she didn't do that.
You have such Gideon apologia. This is so fascinating.
I have a master's degree in English is what this is.
Okay.
Oof, wow.
Wow. Okay.
I will pull that card.
Well, I guess all of our opinions are now null and void. It's been real fun, hold y'all. Thank you so much for bringing this
fallacies,
humble theater person
argument from authority. The fallacy is used when a person appeals to a false sense of authority as evidence for a claim. Okay. Now that we're all... now that we're all taking each other to task, any final thoughts? Since we went way over time.
This is a really good book. We have no idea what's happening. I'm excited for the fourth one. I'm excited to see what else comes from the mind of the author. I read somewhere that she wants to write outside of this world, which is, I would love to see what her other stories would be like, because, like, I think this world, like, a lot of it comes from the mystery and us not really knowing all of it. And I'm glad that she knows when to stop and explore other things. I'm excited.
Yeah. Well, Sarah, any final thoughts?
I'm excited for... Well, no. You know what? My final thought is that I'm just real sad that Nona never got to go to that party with all those dogs. It sounded like a great party.
Yeah.
It sounded like a real great party.
It would have been
awesome. We didn't even mention the adorable dog that was in the book.
Yeah,
we had so many things.
Like a dog named Noodle.
We had so many more things to talk about.
To live.
Well, in the next episode, we'll talk all about Noodle the whole episode long.
Which is also my dad's nickname for my new cat, so.
Precious.
Anyway.
Thanks, y'all.
Thank you so much, everyone, for
tuning
in.
You don't have any final thoughts, Chloe?
My thoughts are that Val's wrong about everything. No, I'm just kidding.
No, everyone knows
she has an English degree, so.
Yeah. I have an English degree. I have a master's in English.
My final thought is that
I'm using it daily.
It's done a lot. Could not put this book down. I wanted to savor it. I could not. It's really good. I have so many questions. I just want to know the answers. And it sucks. I have to wait more than a year.
I know. It's painful.
Anyway, just want to mention our pluggables. We have a Twitter, an Instagram, a Pinterest. It is at InMediaLez. We have a subreddit, r/InMediaLez. Our website is InMediaLez.com. And you can reach us at InMediaLez@gmail.com. Thank you, everyone who interacts with us on social media, who reaches out, comments, subscribes, likes, whatever it is you do. Thank you. Sarah, do you have anything you want to plug or mention?
No. I don't have anything to plug. Support my friends.
Support your local theater. Support your local theater as well.
Oh, yes. Support the arts. Yes. Go see a show.
Support the arts. Yes.
Support your local schools and their arts education.
That too. And maybe Sarah will be the stage manager. You don't know. Oh. So
maybe coming to a community theater near you.
Thanks again. And...
we'll see you in the next one.
God bless you. God bless you.
God bless you.
God bless you. So something we should have warned you about. We try not to swear. So that way we don't have to flag it as explicit. But don't worry about what you've done
can
so
you,
far.
Val can bleep you bleep it. Me can out? Bleep it.
Yes, I have a very cute sound of me going bleep.
Oh, that's hilarious. Hi, I work in theater. I don't know what it is to not swear. I'm going to write a post-it right now and stick it on my screen okay. That says, Sarah, don't swear, because otherwise I'm going to forget.
I think the first three episodes, Chloe was constantly like, Val, stop it. We have to re-say that sentence.
Sarah, don't
swear. Sarah, don't be a swearer.
What? Oh my God. See how hard this is for me.